feet is all hooked at that time. So question number one is how long does his net work? Is it from 7:30 to 8 o'clock or is it from 7:30 to midnight? Is he that foolish? And second of all, if you've been listening to him for 3 years, Scott, you probably have gotten a little bit of an impression of what is Shorty's background. Do you believe he used to work in the aerospace industry? B-E-3-Z-T-Z, H-U-L-I-P.
Hello. Sorry, was there a station that wanted to come in?
Question, do you remember Shorty read out his biography on air?
Yeah, I do. He's retired now. I think he's in his early 70s, and he's a school bus driver at the moment. But he comes from a broadcast engineer, radio broadcast engineering technician background. He's a big fan of AM radio in all its forms. I forget the brand name of his favorite amp. He mentions it all the time. They don't make them anymore, and it's a kilowatt AM broadcast transmitter that he's detuned for being mere mortal on ham bands down to 1.5 kV or whatever it is. You guys, is your legal maximum. But no, he's retired from the RF broadcast engineering or technician's trades. You two, compare and contrast, you two are very different, very different, complementary. You go into a lot more of the physics and the science, and Shorty does it in a, not for beginners, but he has a way of also doing it for people who need it made a little more accessible, let's put it that way. And so you arrive at the same point, but your paths to it are actually quite different. Would that be a fair statement, Jim? VE3ZTZ over to VE3JIW?
It would. That would be fair. There's one thing. Shorty does not want to play what if. He doesn't like to guess. That can be daunting sometimes, based on questions. But, by the way, remember, we said West Coast. That puts it 10:30 out of New York. Pretty sure Eastern Time, so it's 10:30 p.m. Friday evening for us East Coasters. And he'll go an hour to 2 hours. And sometimes it's put off till Saturday night. If you're doing nothing at 2 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 days a week, 9100 does a TriviaNet, which is boring in radio, other than you'll hear a lot of the principles and you'll start to recognize the voices. But Shorty's armed a trucking company. He's been in the military. The transmitter, he has two crystals, 3670, 3760, 3780, or 85. He's got two crystals in this Bowens or Bogan Bowers or Bower transmitter.
Sounds like he's an 80-meter man who loves AM, and that's a whole other class of people who like putting out the really potent, high-fidelity amplitude modulation. I think that's an art form among some people who just really love it. And when one of those transmitters comes on the air before your automatic gain control circuit of your radio gets a chance to respond, depending on how he keys the transmitter, it could either come on with an exponential decay or rise, or if it comes on instantaneously. Those AM transmitters in the old day, I remember, they used to come on with a bang, and you know when the guy was there. So 1 or 2 hours, sounds fun. And you guys dial into 9100 on your local repeaters. Is that what you do? Back to you, Scott. C3ZTZ, K2RW.
That's correct. There's up here, we have in Toronto, in the what we call the Greater Toronto Area, the GTA, there are several that are called open repeaters. They have IRLP capability, and the people who operate them will allow, as long as you're well-behaved, they allow free linking. The TechNets are implicitly approved use of the open IRLP links. So I discovered yours just before Christmas there, I guess in the October, late October, November timeframe, and had been uplinking my local repeater. And as Jim was trying to point out there, there's now from time to time two or three other repeaters that are linking in, so people have overheard it and are gravitating towards you. So your audience up here is growing. I was watching the board tonight, and it was just the Mississauga and the Toronto repeater, so it was two. But I have seen it as high as four from up this way. So you're getting an audience up here. Not sure why there isn't participation yet, but you're being listened to, that's for sure.
Comment.
Okay, comment, go right ahead.
I'm Shorty. I was leaving the cottage, my cottage 100 miles north, and I had the radio on and I'm driving. And somebody was talking about problems with their balun on a loop and why it was a problem. And I thought somebody mentioned Shorty, the word Shorty, about his antenna problems. And we thought you knew Shorty because I'm sure I heard somebody say the word Shorty because he had his balun burn up on his 1,000-foot loop. And I thought when you guys were talking about loop antennas and balans and somebody mentioned the word Shorty, you already knew of the gentleman. So, the world is getting closer. If you can, you know, direct the machine to 9100 on a Friday night, we'll listen for you. And he doesn't run, it's very similar to your net. He doesn't run, it's not a check-in net, unless you have a question. But it's not as busy as yours. You actually have a chance of getting in.
If he doesn't have a check-in procedure for people with questions, how does Shorty decide what material to cover? Does he just go down the list of some a respected training manual? Or do people mail in the questions ahead of time by internet or snail mail? If it's not a check-in question live, where does the material come from? I guess I'll send it to you first, Jim. Go ahead, Jim, K2RIW.
He takes check-ins with questions. If you've got a question, he'll say, you know, call sign and then ID and question. But he doesn't, some nets do check-ins for the sake of check-ins. He does, like you allow check-ins, somebody could check in and say no. At the beginning of your net, he doesn't go through that. But if you have a question, yes, you will ask your question, and he takes two or three at a time. You have a chance of getting in. It's not overly busy. It's not swamped. Some nights he has done some procedures for on-air behavior on systems, because realize California gets a hundred hams at a time coming in air and buying a radio, and there's a great problem with people of other radio experience coming on air, and he's done nights of protocol. He's done a night with a monitor to tell people what their deviation level is, assuming that all repeaters are hitting 0 dB. Many different things, it usually starts as, if you have a question, go ahead, and then he attempts to answer it. But he isn't trying to just gather check-ins like some nets.
To clarify that just a bit, you structure your net where you take the check-in list at the very beginning, and then you do the first hour and a bit addressing those questions. And then you move to the space, and then you go into the detailed stuff at the end. Shorty just operates the net with, if you have a question for the TechNet, come forward now. And, you know, if you've got a question, you call sign in, they've got a question, or he starts to lose his voice a bit, which sometimes happens to him. But it's generally about two and a half hours for him on the air. That's the average. Sometimes there's only three questions, and he's out in and out in an hour. But it usually goes about two and a half hours. The E3 that he's at.
That's good to know, Scott. And I guess it's, I guess you guys are a little bit amazed that Jordy's been around for 3 years, and tonight I'm finding out about him. You would think I would know things like this. Well, I don't. I'm maybe not that well connected, and no one on the East Coast, to my knowledge, has brought it to my, brought him to my attention. I vaguely remember having a discussion on balans and loop antennas, and I guess somebody, not me, mentioned the word shorty, and I didn't catch it. Didn't realize what it meant. I vaguely remember a discussion on that topic some time ago. I guess it was you, Scott, who said that Shorty has some significant opinions on the subject of ground plane radials. How much they're required on various kinds of antennas, like half-wave radiator versus quarter-wave radiator, and whether or not a small number of radios on a VHF-UHF antenna that's mounted high up in the air, whether or not that's adequate. That's very different than a broadcast station to work efficiently with their antenna has to have a zillion ground plane radios. But a VHF, UHF ham radio antenna is operating under some rather different conditions. Over to you, Scott. E3TZ, K2LIW. K2Z.
Yeah. That was definitely on the antennas. I was just thinking back to your, from us up here looking at both coasts down there. I'm not sure why we made the assumption that you two should know about each other. I don't think that assumption has any validity, although both Jim and I gave it validity. So apologies for doing that. It's a big planet, and I know as Canadians, we always, when Americans ask us, hey, don't you know Bob? You know, Canada's a big place too, and we don't all know each other. So we apologize for doing that to you. We shouldn't have... shouldn't have done that, but there's just similarities in that you've been doing your tech now for 30 years, obviously much longer, but you're feeling you're Elmering a lot of people in very similar ways, and he's doing it in part because he owns and operates the Western Intertie system, which has got such a large footprint. So he's, I guess, doing it with big RF footprint, and you're doing it with 30 years worth of time. Like I said, there's a compare and contrast. Neither Jim nor I are saying you're identical or anything like that. It's not at all. Very different personalities and approaches and stuff. But both very enjoyable. And if I haven't, I've said it before and I'll say it again, thank you very much. V3ZTZ.
Dick, can you hear me?
Something with a J.
PJ? KJIW, go ahead.
Yeah, if you remember early on, you were talking to KETBHY, James, and you were talking about his water-filled ballon, and you asked him to check and make sure it wasn't shorted. Not shorty, but shorted.
Another word, short or shorter there. I see that I'm coming out on 8-5. Out of curiosity, is the 2-5 input operational on 8-5, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, the battery in my iPhone ran out, so I turned 8-5 back on so I could hear what you guys were saying.
Understand. Oh, I'm going to have to leave you guys because I've got to go to work tomorrow. Bye-bye you all, and it's been fun. Don't know who gets it next, but K2LIW is clear but listening.
Station K2 with a J in it. The comment on Shorty was months ago. I know I was driving back from the cottage, so No, it wasn't the discussion with James tonight. Similar question, but more, but different.
No, I thought maybe it was relevant because he was talking about the kid having shorted coax. He was having problems with his antenna. So I thought it might have been relevant.
Scott, did you bring up RPT twice? Bring up RPT on to 9126?
I brought it up once. If I come in through, I can listen to it that way, but if I come into it through it, if you remember how on the George Jetson's little car sounded when it its way through the universe there, when I transmit through it, it's conveying that downstream. So I only brought it up once. If it came up more times than that, I was someone else.
Okay, well, no, it did come up after that, but Mississauga timed out 8:30, and I forgot about it. I hear the radio again, I'm listening, and it's wind system on Mississauga. Now, I don't know who brought that up. I heard Jason WTD talking to the wind system, but when it timed out, re-enabled control, which means I thought maybe John or you, it wasn't I, entered 9100 instead of 9126. But anyway, so I suffered with the wind system for a while and then got Mississauga back on to 9126 at sort of 9:45. So I missed some of the net tonight. But I was thinking if John connected the wrong note, he could have gone downstairs and done it on the keyboard to stop it. But it was just funny. For a while, I was stuck with the wind system tonight.
Gentlemen?
Go ahead. It's Jim, VE3JIW.
K2J, I just want to pass along to you guys. And the fact that it's also an Echolink. We actually have two Echolink nodes that's carrying it. I don't remember what the actual Echolink numbers are, but you'll find it at W2VL. So if you go to the two call sign, find W2VL, you can hook up there. You can also hook up at W2KTQ, which is actually the machine that Dick was talking on. So it's available there, and these are CDs are always on there. So we do both Echolink and IALP at the same time. And by the way, you guys have a lovely neighborhood up in Mississauga. I've gone to the Morcan factory where I've taken my transmitter course and spent some time off of my XYL from Montreal.
Well, thank you. Scott's laughing, not on air, but see, I have to get internet back at my house, so I'm being a bit of a Luddite right now. Scott's got lots of connectivity, but I don't as much, and I have to get it. So Scott's probably been chuckling in the background. I was at the website, and I liked the primer on repeater operation. I snagged it into WordPad to possibly pass it on because it had some drawings that I thought was probably quite nice. I didn't have time to look at it, but I was at Limark site, and I saw the listing of repeaters and methods, but thank you.
All right, Jerry, I'm going to close it down at this end, and you guys carry on. And actually, the repeater will stay active with the IRLP and let you guys disconnect. We leave our system hung on to the reflector, so anything goes. Okay, you too, Jay.
Good night, Eric.
Good night. Well, Scott, we talked about ground planes. I've got this Canadian Shield right below the base of my antenna. So, I think there's my ground plane. Nice, nice rock. 6 inches below the soil. I'm curious, Scott, what frequency are you using to talk to tonight, right now, have you been on, what frequency on air are you using?
Well, first I'm thinking we should probably be kind to these fine folks and get off their reflector for our local chat here, our RAG queue. So my suggestion is I'll meet you on MISU Union. Can you hit that tonight?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'll be QSY to MISU VE3, ZTZ, clearing.
Well, 7-3 to the Limart group, because they make our Sunday night an interesting finish. 7-3.
7-3, gentlemen. KC2WGB.
12-54.
No worse.
I think this afternoon when I make my phone call and I get a customer service rep, I'm going to immediately say, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to a supervisor.
You'll just be talking to somebody else who sits behind a desk.
I got to talk to someone who's got some electrical knowledge. Unfortunately, I don't think these people I've been talking to have any electrical knowledge.
I told you to tell what to tell them when you call up. That your lights are flickering and you're hearing noises outside. You need somebody to come right away.
I came very close to saying that. I said, I'm afraid that this thing's going to arc and start a fire.
See, you should have just said, it's making noises like a bug zapper and the lights are flickering in my house. Send somebody out here now.
All right, let's see how long this goes on. With the middle halide floodlight, you think I blew out something inside the housing, not just the bulb?
If you said you changed the bulb and it still didn't come on, and you sure you have power going out to it, then I would say it's either the igniter or the ballast.
Well, at this point, the only way I can be 100% certain that there's power going out is one of two things. Get up on a ladder, which I am not supposed to be doing, pull that lamp off, and check that there's voltage at the connections in the pole, or move a file cabinet, which also I'm not supposed to be doing, and pull the timer out and make sure that there's voltage coming out downside from the timer.
Your choice. Both of which seem like you may have to wait a little while. Maybe you should just get a flashlight and shine it on the sign at night.
Uh-huh. I'm going to wait until I'm fully healed before I start pulling that kind of stunt. And by the time I'm fully healed, we'll probably have snow on the ground, and I don't feel like playing with that with snow on the ground. So, it is possible one of the wires came loose inside the pole, because when the storm hit, it rotated that floodlight on the pole.
Could be. Could be. And speak in Mobile, by the way. You could, for a, you know, quick fix just to get your sign lit up, go over to Home or Depot and, or Lowe's and buy one of those solar LED, floodlights that they make. So at least you could stick something, so, you know, nearby and shine it on the sign and let it be solar powered.
We'll see. I don't think it's worth it, because then I have to figure out some sort of way of mounting it up on the pole.
What about nearby on the fence or from the ground?
It's a PVC fence, so it's difficult to attach to it. And from the ground, I also have to be concerned it's a double-sided sign.
So buy two of them, and if it's PVC fence, it's real easy to attach to it. Sheet metal screws.
Yeah, but they leave nice holes afterwards.
But if you use small ones, and then when you're done, you just take a razor blade and the little bit of a ridge that was left. The holes are tiny. You can even fill them up with a drop of white silicone and no one will ever see them.
I'll consider it. Do they make, you were saying that if I do have to change this floodlight, they make LEDs that are floodlights now?
Oh yeah, they got lots of stuff now in LED.
Okay, now, if I start changing the lamp out, I may redo the the box that has the timer in it. Right now, because I have the metal halide, at the time that I built this whole thing, the only timers that would work are the old-fashioned mechanical timers that go inside the box. I also have another timer for another incandescent lamp on the front of the house in that same box. I'd love to change it out to an electronic timer which has sunrise-sunset settings in them.
That's pretty easy to do. All you do is you just turn around and you put a timer on it, and you say the earliest time that it could ever come on would be like, let's say, 4:30. I think that's like the shortest day of the year. So you put the timer to go on at 4:30, and then whatever time you want it to go off in the morning at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., or whatever, and then you put a photo cell in series with the timer. So when the timer kicks on, if the photo cell still senses daylight, it doesn't let the fixture turn on. As soon as it gets dark, the fixture turns on. And the timer overrides the photo cell in the event that it becomes a dull, dreary day. It doesn't leave the light on all day long until it's bright enough for the photo cell to turn it on. The timer turns it off when it's time.
I know, but you don't even have to go that far because they have electronic timers with sunrise and sunset settings in them. I've got one in the box already. The problem came is that originally those electronic timers only had two leads, and to keep the clock running, it actually was throwing a low voltage through an incandescent bulb, and they said you can't use those on a lamp with a ballast. What about the LEDs? Will they be in the same situation?
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. But there's many ways around all that stuff. Just a simple photo cell with the LEDs will be fine. You don't need anything. Just a photo cell. On at dusk and off at dawn.
The other possibility is, I think they make them now, the electronic timers that have three leads and not two. If they got a white, a black, and a red, it'll run independent of the load.
But you're overcomplicating it. Photocell does everything that you want it to do, and you don't need an astronomical time clock.
That's assuming I want the sign lit from dusk to dawn every day.
Well, why not? If it's an LED, it's not using a whole lot of electric.
Yeah, it's possible. Then I can just pull the timer out, put a regular just on-off switch there instead, so in case I ever have to service, I can kill the power.
There you have it. Simple. Easy.
I just gotta figure a location to mount the LED.
Probably mount it in the same housing that the old fixture is in. Just remove all the guts, and you can get one of the LEDs that's called a retrofit. Fits in existing fixtures.
Net time complete.
When I figure out whether this one's dead or not, I'll go shopping. First thing I want to do is see is get the electrical problem in the house solved. The next step is, when I feel up to it, check to see if this lamp is truly dead. And if it's truly dead, call, go get a new fixture, and I'll figure out what I want to do then.
Uh-huh. Okay, what's going on over here with the solid state split for the Cross Island Laurelton Parkway? And everybody's like creepy crawly over here. I'm wondering if we had some idiot get into a MVA because of the fog and the wet roads.
Yes, man, here.
Was that Kramer? Yeah, I got some fog and wet roads up here, but the visibility is pretty decent. The fog seems to be coming down as low as the street lights. It's not coming down to the roadway. Kramer, if that was you, pick it up. Give it to Richie.
I just figured I'd hop on and say hello. I couldn't get through for a while. But the 375 is pretty much back to normal. Richie Rich, does your... I saw those pictures you put up. Does your wife actually play guitar?
My what?
I thought that was your wife. I don't know. There was a picture of... you had a picture up there of a girl opening up a guitar present in bed.
That's my daughter.
Oh, okay. Does she play guitar?
She's learning. She's learning to play the bass guitar.
That guitar was the prettiest guitar I've ever seen.
It's a Fender Squire Jaguar short scale.
And what's good is she's got thin fingers, probably. She can play it. I can't. That's my biggest problem. I've tried to play guitar. My fingers are too fat. I can't get them between the strings, especially on a Squire. I just can't get it between the strings. I don't know. So, oh well.
Use a pick.
No, I mean on the fret hand, the hand that's up on the neck. When I try to push it down, you know, my fingers like hit three strings at once instead of one string in the middle. Very hard to, I'll tell you something, it's hard to play. It's not like piano. Piano, you hit a note, it's there. Guitar, you hit a note, if you're not pushing it right, it doesn't do anything. If you're holding the string next to it, the chord's missing the note. It's impossible for me.
Oh, yep. It is a pretty guitar. It is a pretty guitar. And I also have a regular six-string electric, an ESP LTD, which was my son's, and he doesn't play that anymore. And I've been, when I have a chance, sitting down in front of the Xbox playing Rocksmith with it. And it's hard. It's hard. My fingers don't move like I want them to. I guess age, arthritis, and all that other nonsense just doesn't make them as nimble as I would like them to be, or as flexible. Gary?
Kramer, the trick to getting only one string is to push on the string with your fingertip, not with a flat finger. That's an old violin trick, because the strings are even closer on a violin, and that's what I originally learned on.
I tried. I could kind of do it. Like, I could do, like AC/DC. Oh, where the hell, I could do, like, the beginning of that song I could actually play. I could actually play that. But then there's other songs, like I was trying to figure out that Hell's Bell song, and I have a good ear for... like hearing a note and finding where it is. But on a guitar, on a piano, when I do that, I find a note right away and that's it. It's the same note. On a guitar, I can find that note in five different spots. And then you have to figure out which one is the best to get to the next note that sounds exactly the same. You know, it was interesting with the guitar because it took me a long time. But I can't, you know, it's just, I try to do it with the tips of my fingers. I think I have to let my nails grow a little longer and get the ends of my fingers calloused a little bit. And then maybe I'd be able to do it. But I'll tell you, them guitarists, when you watch them on YouTube or something, and they're playing like Eruption or something, it's unbelievable. I mean, that had to take years for them to do that. They just like whip through it like it's nothing.
Well, I was looking online, and there's a... pretty cool website called learnbass.net, I think, or learnbass.org, and it's all free video guitar lessons, and the guy is, you know, very slow and very methodical about showing you different things. He's got all sorts of exercises for strengthening your fingers and getting the flexibility in them, and stamp, you know, like lessons to start doing, you know, small riffs and stuff like that. So I was looking at that, and of course, you know, I told my daughter about it, and she rolled her eyes and told me to mind my own business, because she's found some YouTube videos or something that she's looking at. So we'll get her started where she's comfortable, and she can move some stuff around and do some things, and then I'm going to send her for some formal lessons. This way, at least, she'll go into them having a little bit of skill instead of just coming in completely cold. And yeah, guitars are interesting that way, because that fifth fret will tune to the string larger than it is. So it's interesting that you could turn around and you could do that, like you were saying, Greg. You know, make the same note, but you can make the same note in a whole different place. Gary, and PPN.
All string instruments have that ability. They jump from one string to the next on the fifth note of the string. And as you move your hand up and down the fingerboard, it's called changing position. The whole idea is to figure out a position where you can get transitions easily. And, Rich, don't let Dana go too long before you give her the instructions, because she could pick up some improper habits, and those are harder to break than teach from the beginning. Kramer?
Yeah, he's absolutely right on that thing. Because I know that's my biggest problem. Everything I do is improper. You know, even on the piano, I could fake it. Like, I play pretty well, I could fake it. But there's things I do, like I'll hold two notes down with one finger and piano player would probably never do that. You know, and I don't use the proper fingering to roll up the keys and things like that. So, I'll tell you, it's interesting. The Highway to Hell thing, those notes are actually really easy. You should try to figure that one out. It's actually really easy and it sounds good. And the Hell's Bells one is one of my favorites. It's hard to do. That one, it looked like it was on the 9th fret. And then you move down to the 7th fret. And, but it's interesting. Like I said, it's almost the same when I'm holding the top string down. That one sounds like an E. When I hold the top string down, I play the top string, bottom string, and then, like, the middle string sounds the same as the top string at that point. It's weird, but it works. I'm totally ignorant when it comes to musical instruments. It's something that I always wished that I could have picked up, even, you know, just a casual thing, but it just... Kind of like Morse code, never got to me. I mean, I would love to be able to sit there and, like you, Kramer, just work something out and get it to sound right, regardless of whether I'm doing it right, wrong, or indifferent. It's one of my dreams. Maybe when I retire, I'll do that if I could still move my fingers. But we'll see what happens. And I thought you were going to comment more on, oh, yeah, let's ride on the flat tire. Taxi cab over here, rolling along on a severe flat. But I thought you were going to comment more on the videos I posted of my daughter getting terrorized. Gary?
I didn't watch the videos, so I'm not going to comment on them. But that bit with the fifth fret, or fourth fret, I forget which one it's supposed to be. That's one of the methods of tuning a string instrument. You put the finger down on the low pitch string, and you play that string and the string above it open. It should sound the same. And if it doesn't, that's what you got to tune. Because technically, if you have a good ear, you should only have to use a reference for one string, and you can tune the others relative to it. Kramer?
The
That I noticed. It was the fifth fret all the way down, except for the string second from the bottom. That one I would have to go to the fourth fret to make it sound like the bottom one, which is kind of weird. Maybe I'm doing something wrong there, but that's what I noticed. So it was fifth fret, the, you know, like you said, the top string open, the next string you're holding the fifth fret, and they sound identical. And then, actually, the other way around. I would hold the top string on the fifth fret and the next one open below it. And then I would do that all the way down until the second one from the bottom. And then I would go to the fourth fret and it would sound the same. But that, I might be wrong on that one. Richie Rich would know better on this answer. And I didn't get to see those videos. Now I'll go back and look. And did you see that video I posted where I roasted that guy at the Christmas party? I don't know if you saw that one.
Probably not, and it's fifth fret all the way down, Kramer. If you're saying that the, whatever, the second from the bottom string, you have to go to the fourth fret, then something's out of tune. But, of course, the simplest way to tune your guitar is with an electronic tuner. They're so darn cheap. We had bought one for my son when he got his sixth string, and it has a setting for bass guitar, and you can either just sit the thing on the table and pluck the strings through the amp, or you could plug the guitar directly into the tuner, and it takes all of 35 seconds to throw the guitar into tune, and you can tune it sharp or flat or wherever you want to put it, you can put it there. But it's, according to the video that I saw, it's fifth fret all the way down. So if you're saying that you get to one and you have to go to the fourth fret, then that string is out of tune. Gary?
Well, I don't remember. I never played guitar, so I can't tell you which frets are which, and I don't even remember the names of the strings. But all I know is the pinky on the violin is the same as the string higher than it.
Yeah, you got to look on the breaking station, recognize, although I didn't pull the call out. It sounded like you said QIQ was a little scratchy. There was a, you know, I'm talking about electric guitar, not bass. I'm not sure what bass does, but that's what I know. Said you also got to look at the pictures of the guitars I have hanging on the wall in the basement. I must have 50 of them, and most of them are Beer logos, except for the Playboy one, which is Naked Girls. They're interesting guitars. Kind of cool. Breaking station, take it and send it over to Richie Rich.
When you're tuning a regular six-string guitar and you're on the fifth, you're tuning from the fifth fret down, the last two strings between A and E, you'll always have to move up one fret in order to tune the guitar properly. But yeah, that's normal. That's normal for a six-string guitar. KQ2QIQ.
Thank you, Glenn. See, I was going by the video I saw from the bass guitar. So bass guitar is fifth fret for all four strings, all three strings of the four strings, and then there you have it. So you were right, Kramer. I was wrong. Told you I am ignorant when it comes to music.
It has something to do with the chromatic scale, it's called, how much the spacing between the various notes are. I used to know all that music theory. It escapes me now. Kramer?
Yeah, I knew there was something weird with that bottom one. I thought I was doing it wrong, but that's how it worked out. What do you call it? Yeah, Rich, I'm going to go back and look at your videos. I didn't see them. And you got to look at my Christmas one where I roasted that guy. I had 5 minutes to prepare for it. They told me, roast this guy, and I did this little roast thing, and it's actually came out good. It's pretty funny. Over to you, and I'm probably going to clear for a little bit, and I just got to run into the thing. I'll be right back.
Say Kramer's gone. He's not coming back. Yeah, the videos were of my daughter getting some happy birthday, too, on Saturday evening in Greenwich Village. Gary, Glenn, stick around if you want. Pop in. Gary, N2ZEP, N2PPN at Rockaway Parkway.
N2PPN, N2ZEP. Yeah, I'm up to Woodhaven Boulevard. Traffic is decent today. It's just a matter of getting past this slowdown and then I should be home free. Glenn?
Good morning, Rich. Actually, a wonderful thing is happening outside today. I'm actually getting a garbage collection of debris from Hurricane Sandy in front of my house. The pile was reaching about, almost shoulder high.
How bad were you damaged, and what kind of, debris is it? Is it sheetrock and all that nonsense, or what?
Sheetrock, countertops, toilets, you name it. It just kind of like started building up after a while. But yeah, after Hurricane Sandy, we got about 16 inches of water in the house. But the house is really starting to come back together, but they were picking up the debris a lot at the beginning, and then it started slowing down, but it looks like today they're starting to pick up quite a bit.
Right. Obviously, if you got 16 inches of water in the house, you cut the sheetrock back to 4 feet high and pulled out all the insulation, and you've done mold remediation?
Yeah, right after the storm, which was right around Halloween, the first about 4 weeks was... tearing out every carpet in the house, they're throwing away pretty much most of the furniture, then ripping up sheetrock, ripping out all the electrical, heating system, you name it. Yeah, mold, getting all the smells out of the house, that was a good one too.
Did you do a proper mold remediation, or did you use topical applications of mold treatments and mildewcides and stuff like that?
All of the above, over about the, and it was after everything was torn out, it took probably another 2.5 to 3 weeks just to do that. And there's like a mixture between bleaches and all kinds of other stuff and treatments. And there was a company called, they do all this kind of cleanup stuff. And yeah, all of the above.
Because one of the things that a lot of the people here in the Rockaways, which is where I'm working now, still haven't done is, they're putting the topical treatments on and they're doing the applications of the bleaches and the mildewcides, but for correct 100% remediation of the mold, you actually have to bake the surfaces to 140 degrees for 5 days.
Yeah, and it was a mixture between blowers and heaters. They came in and the guys in white suits and masks and the whole nine yards.
That was me going in and doing electrical work in the white suits, the masks and stuff, and it scared everybody, which is why they sent me away the first time.
Yeah, the first 2 months, Rich, nobody could live in the house. I mean, it was, and even then, it was really, I could actually just start to move back in a little bit right after Christmas, but luckily right now, a lot of the house is back together again. Most of the sheetrock's back in, the moldings are in, the doors are in. The last two rooms being worked on now are really, downstairs are really just the kitchen and the bathroom.
Alright, well, I'm glad to see you're getting back to normal, and if you need any advice, assistance, or anything, give me a ring and, I can help you out any way I can. I'm just not thrilled with the way that New York City Rapid Repairs is approaching a lot of these poor people and doing the stuff that we're doing as far as the electrical work. But I can't argue with them because they already gave us veiled threats on Friday of, things that would be done to us if we, buck the party line.
Yeah, it's going to be a long recovery here, Rich. There's also going to be so many houses that haven't been even started yet. You can tell the houses that have been part of the recovery because they've already, you see all the debris out of the front lawn and the contractors there and everything, but I'd say still there's like one in four houses where no one's even bothered to start tear-outs yet, and one can only figure what's going to happen with those houses, you know, especially just in a month.
Go back to Gary in a second. Yeah, last week, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, we went to one house, and the laborers were in there, and there was still water in the basement. And I'm like, I'm not even walking in there. I said, I don't even want to come near the house. And I told my foreman, I said, find me someplace else to work, because I'm not working in there. So, yeah, it's a horror show. And you know, there's really, you know, nothing yet you could say that makes anybody feel any better for what happened, other than, you know, I'm here to help, and what can I do to, you know, get your life back to normal. Gary, over to you, and 2PPN pulling into Floyd Bennett Field. Rich, they had you starting to work on electrical for a building that hadn't been pumped out yet? That's ridiculous. Correct, Glenn? Where'd everyone go? Glenn didn't come back.
Yeah, I'm still here, Rich, but I'm getting ready for work, so I'll be listening on the side. CQQIQ.
I guess I'll chat with you later. I'm just going through the checkpoint over here in Floyd Bennett. Rich, I'm almost at the tunnel, so I'll say 7-3 now also. And I'll let you know if and when life ever shows up and does anything. N2ZDP. I'll catch you later. And keep in touch. It's a Pippian Mobile.
Yeah.